You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Matt Gillum, sitting in for Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our Idaho Matters Reporter Roundtable. We're going to take a look back at some of the big events that made headlines around the Gem State this past week. Joining us on the panel are Scott McIntosh with Idaho Press, Don Day of Boise Dev, and Seth Ogilvie with Idaho Public Television. Glad to have each of you on board today.
Idaho as a total.
You're just here. So as we usually do this time of year, let's start off this week at the legislature. Scott and Seth, what happened Monday with the bill attempting to make it harder to get ballot initiatives in front of voters?
Well, it's been going on all week. I think initially it started.
Oh, there's a part two. Don't worry.
Exactly. Today was kind of the climax. I mean, we had, two or three hours of testimony, a lot of people coming through. I think 60 people ended up testifying today. A lot of them overwhelmingly were against this. A court case out of Colorado started coming up. Senator C. Scott Groh said that this was proof that this process was the way to go. The ACLU's Kathy Grismeyer cited the same case, saying the exact opposite. And then later in a tweet pulled up the case because apparently it is an ACLU case saying, no, we're correct. We're looking at the docket here. So that was an interesting end to the hearing. They didn't end up voting. They held the bill in committee. But from what I'm hearing from everyone, this is a zombie bill now.
Mm.
It wants brains and it will come back.
Well, how contentious was the hearing today?
It got pretty contentious at some points. People were gaveled down. They were told to stop. They were told to be polite, not referring to other senators, not referring to other people who talked. As far as the decorum of the Senate goes, I think this was, at about a 10 of what they let go.
Well, give us a little bit of the backstory. What did happen exactly on Monday? A lawmaker was basically said, all of these people are going to be testifying against this bill. We're just going to be hearing nothing but the same. Let's just stop it.
Right. That was Senator Patty Ann Lodge, the chairwoman of the committee. And she said, there were, 150 people signed up against the bill. And she said, well, let's cut this short. We know what they're going to say. They're all against it. And so we don't have to hear them. But they did end up continuing the hearing to this morning.
Now, she did get some slap on the wrist or some sort of like admonishment for that.
Right. So Senator Chuck Winder, he did say, well, hold on a minute. Just because they're all against it doesn't mean that we don't listen to them. So, they took out their time to come down here. So we should hear them out. So they did end up continuing the hearing.
And on Tuesday, we had a legislative leadership lunch where the leaders from the House and the Senate normally come and talk to the press corps. At that luncheon, the pro tem definitely said this wasn't acceptable. We didn't agree with how this played out. And we're going to talk to our committee chairmen because it's not just Chairman Lodge, who's the chairman of the Senate State Affairs Committee. There was a similar instance in the Resources Committee in the Senate as well earlier this year. I think it was last week, but I'm not completely sure of the date, where a similar thing happened. About 150 people came to testify. They only had a couple of minutes budgeted for the hearing. Mm-hmm. And you can take that two ways. You can take that, we don't want to hear from the people, which I think a lot of people that came to testify took it that way. Or you can say, look, the legislature didn't know this was going to be quite as big of an issue, and it was just poor planning. Mm-hmm. And I think when you saw what happened, at least legislative leadership said, this was poor planning, we can rectify this. They came back today, had two, 3 hours of testimony, and did hear from the people.
Mm-hmm. So, Seth, you said this is basically now going to be a zombie bill. But I want to look at something, a lighter thing to come out of this story. Scott, maybe you can touch on this. I've been seeing something about effigies. I saw a photo of what looked like a life-size drawing of a lawmaker in a blue suit. Are they practicing voodoo at the State House now?
No, but this is...
That's how they get the zombies.
So Reclaim Idaho, which is the organization that brought Medicaid expansion to the ballot last year, this group has come out against this ballot initiative measure that would make it much more difficult to bring an initiative or a referendum to the ballot. And so they, announced that they were going to have a town hall meeting last night, and they invited Senator Groh, who is the the legislator who brought the bill and is sponsoring it and defending it, and they invited him to the town hall meeting last night. Now, he declined to attend, and so what Reclaim Idaho did was they made a large life-size cutout, cartoonish cutout of Senator Groh. with a photo of his head on top of the cutout.
The fact that you're getting through this with a straight face is mystifying.
Yeah, no, it's theater for sure. So it took on a personal bent, and I think Senator Brent Hill today said, don't be bringing up the senator's name, even though he is the one who is sponsoring this bill and defending Baltimore. This bill. But it has sort of gotten ugly and personal.
And it comes to some of the points that we've been hearing about for the last few years in the Senate, this idea of decorum, this idea of civility. And when you have a group of folks who want civility, who have all the power, they get to set the rules. Mm-hmm. I think when you have a group of folks, I've been talking to some of the people who traveled here for it, who felt like they were silenced on Monday, didn't necessarily know if they were going to get a chance to talk today, which is Friday. I think they were like, civility's out the window. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to make the rules. We're going to cause a scene. We're going to decorum be damned at this point, because we want to be heard.
Right. And if that's what you're going to do, then we're going to do what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And sorry if you don't like it. And there are very passionate folks on this issue for sure, because they definitely feel that this is a usurping of the voter's voice.
So let's stay at the Capitol and turn to the urban renewal bill that would require a vote on Boise's proposed stadium and the new downtown library. That legislation is stuck in committee. The chairman of the Senate committee says that he thinks it needs more debate. Scott and Seth, what's going on with this one?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. This is also something that the House Majority Leader Mike Moyle is very passionate about. They're looking at the way in which the urban renewal rules are put out there, and they think that the people of given cities should have more of a voice in it. I pointed out to the House Majority Leader the other day that, ironically, this would make the vote for a stadium or a library an actual lower threshold than a vote for a school, which I just thought was an interesting side note to the whole thing, that we could actually get a stadium before we could get a new school, depending on how the voters reacted to it.
Well, and I think the interesting thing that not a lot of people are taking notice of is that the chairman of this committee is Jim Rice. And the part of that's being missed here is Caldwell, that Jim Rice is from Caldwell, and Caldwell is a very active user of urban renewal. And I would imagine that he insists that this is not a
tit for tat thing.
No. And I think that's what people are focusing on, that this is somehow a way to get at the city of Boise, that liberal bastion, and try to stop any projects.
You had Mike Journey coming out and saying that it was
a partisan attack.
A partisan attack because of a successful progressive agenda in Boise.
Yeah, and it's just very interesting now that it comes before Jim Rice's committee, and he's the chairman, and he's from Caldwell, and I would imagine he knows firsthand and has a lot of constituents who say, well, hold on a minute. If we do a lot of projects in Caldwell, and we're going to have to go up for a vote every time we want to put in a sewer line or every time we want to put in a park using urban renewal dollars. So Senator Rice has effectively shelved the bill for now.
You do have a lot of legislators that are saying this isn't a vote against Boise. This is a vote for Boiseans. This actually gets them a seat at the table rather than the mayor, the city council, and the bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. They're saying this is empowering the actual people within those communities. So I think you can weigh it both ways.
Don, you want to jump in?
I talked to Senator Rice this week, and he said to me that he is trying to talk to all constituencies involved. I think that people are a little concerned about the way the bill is currently structured and maybe some feelings of it being a little more broad than might be workable. It clearly is a reaction to the stadium and the library in Boise. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But folks are concerned that the way the bill is drafted presently could cause pretty big issues for urban renewal across the state. And, I mean, it's used everywhere. It's used in the Magic Valley. It's used in Rexburg, Sugar City. I mean, it is everywhere. So it's not a tool that's just used in Boise, whereas sometimes I think it gets defined as being this thing that Boise does.
And with a lot of the aging infrastructure you see throughout the state, primarily in those more rural areas and in cities, you know, all over the state here, you're going to probably see a lot of people looking to urban renewal as a way to get a new courthouse, get some of those infrastructure projects downtown when their streets are kind of falling apart. I'm thinking of a place like in Malad, where they really haven't had any major infrastructure services upgraded since the earthquake. And those buildings are kind of on their last leg. The urban renewal piece would probably be a way to tackle that. They just haven't gone down that avenue yet. And maybe if this becomes law at some point, maybe it'll be a little more difficult to go that way.
Yeah.
Let's stick with the topic of stadiums and libraries. Don, what about your story about the city of Boise changing the travel policy for members of the architecture firm that is designing the library? Two words jumped out at me when I read that. First class.
Yeah, so I had done some reporting in September on the architecture firm that the city hired that they herald as world-class Softy Architects, and started to look into this idea that the principal in that firm had been granted first-class travel. Looking at the public records, not only was he flying first class, but another member of his team had been flying first class both before the contract was signed and after. And some of these trips had cost the city quite a bit just to get the people here to have these meetings. So the city is now taking the second step in reaction to that reporting. Earlier this month, they decided to change the contract language with Softy Architects to say, we're going to pay you a flat fee per trip. Mm-hmm. So instead of we spend the money, we submit reimbursement, you pay us back, they're going to now get a set amount depending on how long they're here and where they're from. So that puts kind of some rails around this. They also had previously asked for reimbursement for one of the members of the team who flew first class and was not authorized to. So just kind of a little back and forth here as they try and tighten this up and watch the dollars. And I think other people are watching the dollars for them too.
Hey, Don, are you suggesting we should get a second class architect?
Well, uh-oh. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's just about the first class travel. Joking aside, it made people go, boy, is this the right thing to be doing?
Joining us this Friday are Scott McIntosh with Idaho Press, Don Day with Boise Dev, and Seth Ogilvy with Idaho Public Television. Scott, I want to turn to you right now. We had some elections this week. School bond elections aren't exactly the brightest and showiest of elections, but voters went to the polls, and we actually got some pretty surprising results. What is going on in the Valley View School District?
Right. So the Valley View School District, they had put up a $65 million bond to build a new middle school and do some renovations at an existing middle school and do some security upgrades. And the bond passed, and I say that kind of in italics, it received 1,615 votes, and that is 66.7% of the vote. Now, a school bond requires a two-thirds supermajority to pass. If two votes had gone the other direction, receiving 1,613 votes, it would have been 66.582% of the vote, and it would have failed.
This is the definition of hair's breadth.
Yes. I mean, if there had been one vote, it would have been closer. But two-vote difference falls below this 0.10% difference that triggers an automatic recount in the state of Idaho. And Kane County is already, as soon as the results came in, they're like, all right, well, let's just get ready for a recount because this is really close. And so sure enough, that two-vote difference calls for an automatic recount. I believe this morning the Kane County commissioners canvassed the election and certified the votes. And so now the elections office will go forward with a recount process. And the process for that is that you hand count 5% of the ballots and you compare it with the results from the machine that machine counted. And if you are within 1% of that, then you can go ahead and recount the rest of the ballots using the machine. If not, then you have to recount by hand. There were 2,412 votes total.
Yeah, this is not an insurmountable number of votes to recount.
Yeah, it won't be. It wouldn't be even if you had to do it by hand. It wouldn't be an arduous task. So, the Valley View School District is still up in the air whether they've got a $65 million bond to work with.
We will wait and see what happens on this one. Yeah. Don, Boise Dev had a fantastic headline this week. Did a mafia soldier doom Boise's Rascal Flats and Meridian's Toby Keith's restaurant? Tell me what happened here, and also tell me who did not love these bars and grills.
Well, when I started this site 3 years ago, I never thought I would be writing about the mafia in Boise. But really, credit goes to terrific long-term reporting by the Arizona Republic, which looked at the Rascal Flats restaurants across the country. And it was kind of strange because they only opened one and then they announced a bunch more and they never actually happened and the first one closed. And it's a heck of a complicated tale, but the simple nature of it is this gentleman who the Republic says is a mafia soldier had been pulling the strings on these Rascal Flatts restaurant projects and leaving these profanity laced. I'll read one for you. No, I'm just kidding. Sam just got nervous over there. Leaving these profanity laced voicemails and saying all this stuff. So I looked at the Republic's reporting and kind of matched it up with what you could find in Boise Public Records. And there was this exchange that had happened apparent mob soldier and contractors and saying, we're done, we're off. And then all of a sudden the Boise project gets pulled. They send a note to the city planning services saying enough of the building permit. So the projects ultimately fell apart. Where Toby Keats comes in is these projects look like they were totally separate, but the supposed mafia soldier was actually behind the Toby Keats project in Meridian and throughout the country. So apparently country bands licensing their names, maybe they should be careful with restaurants. And that project ended with a lawsuit for eviction from CenterCal, which owns the Village at Meridian. And they were awarded, according to the Arizona Republic, a $5.9 million judgment on that. I don't know if it ever got paid. That's always the big question on that. But a fascinating story. I'm not doing it justice. You'll have to check out Boise Dev and then click over to the Republic and see their reporting because it is crazy. So we almost had a mob-run restaurant, according to the Arizona Republic. I want to be very clear about that, in downtown Boise, right, if it had not fallen apart.
I think we all would have loved that bar and grill.
Is there a possibility we could get a Built to Spill restaurant?
Yeah. Maybe they'll license their name to you.
maybe Built to Spill has more connections with the Yakuza. We don't really know. Let's head back to the legislature for a few minutes. Seth, what is happening on Medicaid expansion? Were there any movements this week? Any word on requirements that are going to be attached to it, not going to be attached to it? Where are we with that?
I think we're at the point in the legislature where this is all being negotiated behind the scenes. So you've got several bodies within the bodies that are all trying to figure out what they want. And I think the speaker said it best when he said, I don't have the votes for Medicaid expansion clean. I don't have the votes for the sideboards, and I don't have the votes to get rid of it. The House Republican caucus is kind of negotiating with themselves, trying to figure out a way to pass it with just the House Republican caucus. The problem is you've got a conservative wing that doesn't want to pass anything at all and would just rather see it go away. Without them, they don't have the votes for these sideboards or a clean bill. You have the Democrats that are being left out of the conversation that, if added to the Republican votes, conceivably could pass something. But the Speaker and the caucus don't want to go to the Dems. They'd rather figure this out in the Republican side. The other portion of that is you have the Senate that doesn't necessarily always see eye to eye with what the House is doing. And you have a bunch of these bills that are sitting in drawers all over the place. So maybe you take one of those bills that's in a drawer, we call them hostages, and you use that as a bargaining chip to get maybe one or two of these other people. Like, what if we have the Senate hear this bill? Would you be willing to do this? So I think that's what's going on behind the scenes. And the tension levels are really high at this point because everyone is kind of digging in. Everyone wants to be heard, and no one feels like they're the most important person in the room, which I think every politician feels like they're the most important person in the room.
But the question I have is, if they do nothing, doesn't Medicaid expansion just happen because it was passed by the voters?
So the biggest hostage out there is the health and welfare budget. So the House is holding that until they figure out what else is going on. The moment they pass the health and welfare budget, that's got the money in there. We've already asked the federal government for a waiver. Basically, Medicaid expansion happens. So they're not going to let that hostage go until they've figured out what they want to do. So we've asked for the waiver. Conceivably, the Health and Welfare Department, with how their money is allocated, they could probably find a way to fund it without the legislature actually doing something because they've got a lot of control over their cash. But the governor's also said, I don't want you guys leaving this building until we've figured out how to fund Medicaid expansion.
So the likely won't let them leave.
He said he won't. But, you know, maybe they call his bluff. And you can say a lot of things. Doing it's a different story.
And that would then – we'd have a very long session, which is now sort of gets to the next question. I mean, we call this the Reporter Roundtable for a reason. I want each and every one of you to channel Carnac the Magnificent. Do we have any idea of when the legislature is going to go home? Predictions from each and every one of you, please.
Great.
Probably 5 minutes after we figure out Medicaid expansion.
April 12th.
I'm going to say that the legislature will end the same day that Bogus ends their season.
When is that?
Whenever the snow runs out.
April 12th.
Yeah, at this point, will a groundhog see its shadow? That's basically going to be a deciding factor on this.
The other thing is crops need to be planted. There's a lot of farmers, a lot of ranchers in that building, and eventually they're going to start saying, like, hey, my bottom line's getting affected here, and we need to get out.
Well, April 12th. All right, you heard it here. Mark your calendars. We'll see if Scott's right. Let's quickly talk about something out today. We're getting word that a lawmaker from North Idaho, Post Falls Republican Scott Green, is facing federal charges. Authorities say he helped a rich couple dodge taxes years ago. Who wants to take this and tell us what we know about Scott Green and these accusations that are against him? They're coming out of Texas.
Right. So it's Representative John Green from Post Falls, Republican from Post Falls. He was indicted last year in July for a conspiracy to defraud the U.S. government. Prosecutors are claiming that he represented a couple who sold a bunch of gold coins, and he took the proceeds from the sale of those gold coins and put them in his attorney account in an effort to evade paying taxes. And so those are the charges against him. And his attorney says that it's political, it's politically motivated, that they come out. This is something that happened in 2005 or 2006. And now all of a sudden, now that he wins the primary and gets elected to the legislature, now all of a sudden he gets charged.
And John Green has run for numerous offices before. He's been in Idaho for some time, right?
He has. He has run for sheriff. He ran for the House before. And interestingly enough, he represented former Representative Phil Hart, who declined to pay his federal income taxes since 1996, and he lost that case and was ordered to pay $53,000 in back taxes. John Green was the attorney who represented Phil Hart in that case.
And to make these things totally mirror each other, Phil Hart was a huge advocate for the gold standard, mm-hmm. and actually did hand out a bunch of like commemorative gold coins. I can't remember what the face on the coin was, but there's a lot of questions on whether or not that was even legal to make your own currency and pass it around. Mm-hmm. So there is something in the water up there in North Idaho where you get involved with the gold standard, and maybe you fudge your taxes a little bit. Maybe they just need better accountants up there.
CPAs, North CPAs, Idaho, yeah. Go for it. Let's rein this in let's end on a happier note for this week. Don Chip, the cookie shop, is headed out to Meridian. Should people there start chilling their carton of milk?
Has anybody had Chip in this room? It's radio.
I see. There's never mind. Hands are up.
So these are right now they're available just at downtown Boise and by delivery. And they come in this container with these huge four cookies. And I hate to advocate for a product, but they're delicious. It's a Utah company. They opened up a location downtown. They have kind of a radius of delivery, and now they're opening at the Village of Meridian. So folks who are out there can get these giant cookies, and they sell three products: chocolate chip cookies, a rotating cookie of the month, and milk, and that's it. So I would imagine it will push out their delivery radius. So if you're living out in Star, you might be able to get cookie delivery here soon.
We actually had some of those cookies for our December fest, our pledge festival, not this current one that's going on right now, but last year, and they were delicious.
They're huge.
They were even like a day old, and they were still soft and delicious. I was really surprised at how good they were.
Yeah, so
it's a pretty simple business model then, cookies and milk. There you go.
We're going to take a bold stance. We're for cookies.
Bro cookies. Yes. Idaho matters.
Yes.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in today. We've been speaking with Scott McIntosh of the Idaho Press, Don Day with Boise Dev, and Seth Ogilvie with Idaho Public Television.